1 year ago this week, a man named George Floyd was accused of passing a fake $20 bill. And rather than questioning, arresting, and investigating, he had his life needlessly taken in a horrific act of violence that saw police officer Derek Chauvin place his knee on the neck of the accused for 9.5 minutes. That heinous decision by Derek Chauvin sparked the single biggest civil rights protest in American history. That heinous decision by Derek Chauvin exposed the ugly truth about how the former U.S. president had actually empowered racists everywhere. That heinous decision by Derek Chauvin eventually led to his arrest, where we believe he will spend the rest of his life in prison. But George Floyd didn't sacrifice his life to initiate change. Don't get it twisted. He was not a willing martyr. He had his life taken from him by a man who was being paid by the public to protect him. Racism is still very much alive. Police are still not above the law. The fight isn't over. Defund, reorganize, re-educate, repair. Black Lives Matter. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 57th installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting. You know, we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. If you're listening to us right now on one of your favorite podcast providers, we say thanks for joining us. You also have the option of visiting our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com, and checking out the video version of this show. I'm not going to lie, watching our ugly mugs is funnier than just listening. Faces for radio, voices for newspaper, but undeterred, we're still going. When you're on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com, check out our merch. We've got hoodies, tees, tanks, hats, cooking aprons, gym bags, whatever the hell you need. It's all there. The quality is great. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my pleasure to introduce the Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier to my Dave Semenko, Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell, and your bro, Danny O.
I will not take anyone other than 99. I have to be the great one. I'm sorry.
Well, you're not tough enough to be Messier.
Yeah, it's based on size alone, bro.
No issues with that.
It ain't your skating ability.
I'm all of it. No. He's 99. He's the great one. I'm the worst one. I couldn't skate for 99 seconds.
You're barely 99 inches.
That too. It's a shame this is not episode 99, because that would have been a fantastic.
That would have been hype. I'll recycle it. No one will remember.
Good. Yeah, but what I do want to do to start this episode is say the name Darnella Frazier and send a huge amount of love and respect to the once 17-year-old girl who was walking her 9-year-old cousin to the corner store and now has become world-renowned for capturing this heinous act that Donnie started the show discussing. Without Darnella's video, I do not believe Derek Chauvin is a convicted murderer. I don't believe that Derek Chauvin is arrested. And for that child, who only just became, technically speaking, an adult, and for her 9-year-old, now 10-year-old, I believe, cousin, who will still be a child for quite some time, they have to live with something I can't possibly imagine. But she truly deserves all kinds of praise, because as much as George Floyd's name is attached to the biggest civil rights movement of our time, without her, none of this change that we hope is being made is being made. So a lot of love and a shout out to Darnella Frazier.
The plus side to this, not only did Darnella do the world a service by capturing everything on video, and your point is correct. Being underagers and having to witness that, they're probably going to need therapy for the rest of their lives. Mm. That all being said, a judge in Minnesota did rule on May 12th, just a couple weeks ago, that the extenuating circumstances of the case mean that Chauvin is eligible to receive more prison time than is actually required by the state for the crimes that he has been convicted of. So this is something we talked about the day of the conviction, and it has now been confirmed as of May 12th. He's looking at right now what prognosticators are saying based on that judge's decision, probably 30 years in prison. Which, you know,
what is that date again? I thought it was what, June 25th?
That's sentencing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what we're looking at, really, is that's the day.
But the judge had to rule that he was able to get more time than what the parameters allow. And that's happened.
But let's not forget, he's also able to get less fucking time.
It's possible. I don't think
that's where the problem is. No, he cannot. He cannot, because as much as I hate to say it, you almost think like the world needs to have this catalyst to say enough is enough.
Right.
It's sorry that some people, sorry to use your own fucking words, people. Right. Sorry, but some people are just going to have to die for it. Right. Yeah. Well, guess what? One of y'all's is going to have to fucking die for it too.
Then. Yeah.
That's the way there has to be that sacrificial lamb. Otherwise it's just going to keep going back and forth. You know what I mean?
I mean,
and it's horrible.
Agreed, brother. Even with him being a so-called sacrificial lamb, the shit it obviously has continued and will continue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like the world has been wiped clean of hatred, racism, bigotry, or police brutality. And Donnie has been confident since the day of the trial, probably before, not the day of the trial, the day of the verdict. And I still remain cautiously, there was an anxiety coming into the day of the verdict that you know about that I still have with respect to sentencing, because if Chauvin doesn't die in jail, I think that is the almost loophole, if you will, for racism to flourish in the way that it has. You know what I'm saying?
Now, there has to be an ultimate penalty. Don't get me wrong. I'm not wishing any death upon Derek Chauvin in jail or any other way, shape, or form. What happens, happens. I think we have to, at this point, let the system decide. We are hoping and we are praying and we are, you know, wishing, as it were, that the right decision is made in this, and let that happen. I'm not wishing any death upon anybody because I don't want to be one of those people. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there has to be change to all of this. The first thing that you have to do is you have to stop call it policing, because who are you policing? You know, law enforcement is a different subject altogether. Right. Let's not get it twisted. I don't want to see cops getting shot while they're sitting in their cruisers for no reason too. I don't want to see that happen.
Right.
I believe all of that shit has to stop as well. All of it. So this whole thing has to be addressed, and there has to be a spark. There has to be a catalyst. And I think that's what the world is seeing. This action, this event that we saw a year ago, is that spark, is that catalyst, and can be that change, so that your kid, your kids' kids, they don't ever have to see this. All they're going to know is the stories of it.
Are either of you gentlemen familiar with YouTube star Larry Lawton?
I'm barely a gentleman.
Hey!
So Larry Lawton, I'll get you up to speed. He is a jewel thief, convicted, served his time, was in prison for many, many years. Now he's on YouTube with this wildly popular YouTube channel where he talks about what it's really like in jail.
Wow.
And he talks everything from how they made wine in prison, to how accurate movies are when they depict prison scenes, to how you avoid getting raped in prison. Like, he keeps it super, super core and real. And he did a YouTube video a few weeks ago about what's going to happen to Derek Chauvin in jail. Really fascinating. I suggest everyone go watch it. We've also reached out to Larry Lawton's promo team to try and get him here on this program. Fascinating guy. Yeah. And he is hot on YouTube.
Wow.
Larry Lawton.
Lawton. Yeah.
Lawton. What's his Twitter? Can we put that up later?
Yeah, we can post it. Cool. But if you look up Larry Lawton, it's really fat. And he does stuff like he watches videos of like criminals that get caught by the cops, like on surveillance video. And he breaks down like what the fuck they did wrong.
Right. So then what did he do wrong that he got caught?
It's a really interesting story and you got to hear it. And people go, how are you out of jail? And he tells that story too.
Okay.
It's really fascinating stuff. And I don't want to give too much of it away right now in case we do get Larry.
Listen, here's the thing. A lot of people go to jail. That's one thing. And a lot of people get out of jail. That's another thing. Mm. The people that stay out of jail have the story to tell. The people that go back to jail didn't learn their lesson.
You got it.
Yeah. And I think surviving jail is a big,
100%. It's a different world.
I don't mean not dying physically. I mean surviving that life and coming out and finding some.
There's different rules. There's different rules. There's different terms. There's different etiquette. There's different standards. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it is a completely different world. And that's why you see a lot of times, a lot of people become more comfortable with that world, I think, than they do with what the society that you and I, that we all live in right now. And so you find a lot of them, a majority of them, I would say, or at least some of them find a way to get back to that world. As fast as possible.
You're right.
Speaking of prison, to segue,
Prison Break was a shit show.
It got stupid after season one.
I was going to segue to Shawshank Redemption, since before the show we were talking about Stephen King books turned into movies. Many of those guys had to they couldn't leave jail without feeling
uncomfortable. Stop turning away the listeners, Dan.
Everyone knows that's a dope movie.
I was going to talk about something that's actually topical. Music star
Danny O.
Marilyn Manson will not be going to visit the White Mountains in New Hampshire anytime soon because a warrant was issued for his arrest on Tuesday of this week in conjunction with several physical assault charges from 2019. Apparently, Marilyn Manson and his representation have been familiar with the fact that this warrant was coming, and they've been asked to turn themselves in to New Hampshire authorities for the last 2 years. And he just said, fuck it. I ain't going back to New Hampshire.
Right.
So,
wait, hold up. Warrant that way.
I was just about to say that. Well, I was just about to say that.
They're misdemeanor charges, right?
But you said that had something to do with...
But state lines are fucking invisible, bro.
Yeah, but what the New Hampshire cops are going to go to L.A. and pick them up? No.
Like this dude blends.
But what crime... Right. What crime, though, is it? What are we talking about here that they can't say, hey, L.A. police or wherever he's at?
It's misdemeanor assault, so they don't cross...
An assault. So for real, you can assault somebody.
Who did he slap out?
Because I need to know the level of assault I can get away with as long as it's in a different place than where I live.
Yeah, because too much salt will fuck up a steak, too.
All right, you want the actual... Okay, you know what?
Yeah, I want to know what's the level of slap a bit?
So he insulted a videographer.
Okay.
Insulted.
Assaulted. What does it? What does that mean, though?
The videographer had been subcontracted by a New Hampshire-based company to video a Marilyn Manson concert. Okay. He had been located in the stage's pit area when the alleged assault occurred. A Class A misdemeanor in New Hampshire can carry a possible jail sentence of up to a year and a fine of $2,000 U.S.
Oh, okay. So dude was in photo pit in front of the stage during the show?
Yeah,
and Marilyn Manson, like either spat on him or kicked him or something like that. These are things that he's known to have done in a lot of his shows. He's gotten into fistfights with his own band in his shows. You know what I mean? He's a little left of center sometimes, so to speak.
Sometimes.
His music, as it were. Okay, I can appreciate a few good Marilyn Manson songs. I appreciate the fact that, you know, Jamie Priestley looked hot as hell in one of the videos that she did for the cover that, you know, Marilyn Manson did. That's
the
cool.
Beautiful People might have the best guitar riff of all time.
As a human, I think that Marilyn Manson is a piece of shit.
Tid,
plain and simple.
Remember when you and I were still working at Whiskey Saigon back in the day and Marilyn Manson was there for a CD release party? You want to tell
Absolutely, I do. And this is exactly why I feel like I'm very comfortable in saying this. And he may have changed since then. But if I'm telling a story about a person that I know who has led into this kind of behavior, so you see a pattern here over the years. When we were working at said club in Toronto, he was doing a CD release party, and himself and a couple of other people from his band had showed up. Mm-hmm. Not the entire band, because we don't got no capacity for no ska band. So
it was like a 10,000 person capacity club, but we can't handle the Marilyn Manson ensemble.
Yeah, bro, if there's more than five people in your band, you're a ska band. So that's all there is to it. So he's there, he's doing his thing. We've got the floor and an area cut off for him, and then this prick had the audacity to try to sneak somebody in the back door, which is not something that's unheard of.
Right.
You know what I mean? We've all been there in this capacity.
That was my back door.
And you expect us isolate that fucking statement.
I was just going to say.
Clarify, I was running the back door.
Yeah, you were.
You mean rear entrance to the facility?
100%. Just making sure. So okay. He tried to get a person into the club. And this person turned out to not be of legal age to be entering the club.
He's like a teenager.
And then he proceeded to start to get uppity about it. And we all know how well I handle uppityness. It didn't end well because they conveniently left their own CD release party shortly after that.
Wow. I thought Ted was going to kill Marilyn Manson.
Wow. So pretty much in real life, fuck Marilyn Manson.
Wow.
I literally thought.
I appreciate the music because I can separate the two.
That's an interesting story. I did not know that.
Yeah. So there you go.
Ted's going to kill ya. He's going to kill ya.
Nope. I would have just made him leave.
I really thought you were going to kill him that night.
Wow.
That's just me selling it.
Marilyn, go to New Hampshire. Pay the fucking money. Fuck off.
Right? Yeah. Stop being an asshole.
Another story. It was kind of weird. Last night, I was looking for a movie to watch with my little one, and it was so funny, actually. He went on this rant about how he hates Jack Black.
Really?
Like, why do you hate Jack Black? You're like, Jack Black.
Alina loves Jack Black. She calls him Jack the Black for some reason. She loves Jack the Black.
She keeps going on. He keeps going on and on going, Jack Black's cringy. So he didn't want to watch School of Rock. We ended up settling on Gulliver, which is another Jack Black movie. And he ended up liking that. But anyway, Kevin Clark, who was the drummer when he was, I guess, 12 years old or so, 13 years old in School of Rock back in 2003. He played Freddie Spazzy McGee Jones. Spazzy McGee was what Jack Black's character called him. Kevin Clark, shockingly and sadly, was killed this week on Wednesday, just yesterday, when a car struck him while he was riding his bike. People wondering whatever happened to Kevin Clark, the individual. He didn't really do much in Hollywood. Post School of Rock, his interest was never really acting. He was a drummer first and foremost. He had continued drumming. He recently just started playing with a band called Jess Bess and the Intentions, and they made their debut performance just this past weekend
at the
legendary Wood and Nickel in Highwood, which is a suburb of Chicago. It's a place where so many great bands have played over the years, and the guy finally finds a band he's happy with. They do their big performance. They have a great time. He's loving life. He's out for a bike ride. Struck down.
Wow.
Terrible story, man. And it makes it, you know, like, how do you watch that movie now without shedding a freaking tear?
Well, anytime I hear about anybody getting hit by a car, it really cuts deep. My father and having lost my Bridgen Destro.
Yeah.
In that way, both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds kind of crazy to even give this advice because it sounds completely no-brainer, but to both drivers and pedestrians, it's we take for granted. I mean, most of us who drive, we drive regularly and all the time. And we do things like, I don't know, change the music and, you know, eat. Even I've seen people do all kinds of stuff while driving. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, especially out of respect for Kevin Clark and then people in my life that I just mentioned and so many others out there, to take this opportunity to just give that quick little reminder that just maybe everybody listening and watching to this podcast right now, the next time you're in that driver's seat, or for that matter, crossing the street as a pedestrian, please take extra special care. Be very wary of what you're doing. And don't take life for granted. It is one of the most common things we do in our lives is drive or walk across the street. And it is one of the most dangerous things you can do. And, yeah, I've experienced loss because of it. And, you know, to his family and friends, my heart definitely goes out because I know what that's like. It's clearly, obviously, quick and tragic and out of nowhere. You don't want that to happen to you. You don't want to be part of something like that. So please be careful, everybody.
We have all come because we're old as dirt. We've come from an era where we can remember where there was a lot less people on the road.
Yes.
Even when we learned how to drive, there was a lot less people on the road. There is so many people occupying space right now. Population has grown. Mm-hmm. So it is your duty, because when you go get your driver's test and you drive around that little course or maybe down that side street in parallel park, you know what I mean? But then you got to take that one where you get on the highway for a second and then right back off the highway on that next on ramp. You're not really like just to take your test. You know what I'm saying? You're not really getting a whole lot of time, so to speak, right? But you are getting your fucking test, and then they set you out into the real world to have to drive, and you don't have all of these people, you know what I mean, like you have everywhere else, and now all of a sudden you're stuck in it. So I see why it happens. So people that are out there driving, you gotta take extra special care, it almost seems, you know what I mean? Like, pay attention. I get it. Everybody's in a hurry. Everybody's got some place to be. Okay, give yourself an extra 5 minutes. What, you don't have that extra 5 minutes? All right, just be patient. Know that you're going to show up a minute and a half, 2 minutes late. But you know what you're not going to do? You're not going to kill somebody today. You're not going to die today. And well, that's the most important thing, man. That's what you got to do. You got to make it to tomorrow. Everybody's got to make it to tomorrow.
Well said, my man. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and all of his loved ones and everyone out there. You know, be careful, man. Put the goddamn phones down when you're driving and do your thing. Tid, you need to make an executive decision for me. I don't know what happened to Dan. His camera dropped out and our guest is sitting backstage. What do we do? Do we wait for Dan or do we throw to our guest?
Here's the thing. I think we need to throw to our guest. I think that Dan may have electrocuted himself and died, because what it sounded like to me, it sounded like his drink gimmick probably just spilled onto the carpet and he was about to swear and it got onto his power bar. And I mean, you might want to look out the window and see if that building is on fire right now. I'm just saying.
Here's the worst part. Here's the worst
part. Is that Studio B?
He's using my computer. He probably spilled a bottle of water all over my computer.
And look, there he is. Look, welcome back. Danny O managed to grace us. So we had a bet going. We had a bet. What was it? Did you spill water?
Yes.
You spilled water. Was your water jar? Did it get all over the power bar?
Yes.
Oh, dude. Tid, buy a lottery ticket.
Get some of that.
Literally, bro. Like, the whole power bar.
Did you spill it all over my laptop?
No, man. A laptop is nowhere near it.
Thank you.
It's in front of me. This is over here. And it's that guy, Tid, that's nuts, man.
He's a smart guy.
How did you know that?
Yo, man.
He's known you long enough. He's known you long enough to know what your different faces of panic mean.
Yeah, I heard the sound. I heard the sound. Did I heard you? The sound of the clink that's your drink jar, where it felt in behind there on the stack. As soon as I saw you go back, I go, there's a power bar there, guaranteed. And he shut it off. He shut it off instantly so that nothing would happen. Ooh, and then went to clean it all up, right? Don't fuck with cats.
This is what I'm saying. That is uncanny shit, bro.
It's time for the big hello, and doing a big over-the-top introduction for all of our guests is kind of our deal, but doing one for this man just feels good because he's one of the classiest and most humble individuals I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. Most people out there who are fans of professional wrestling will remember this man as a referee with the WWE from about 85 to 2009. And during that span, he never once spray tanned and smiled for the camera like he was auditioning for a toothpaste commercial. So you know we're not introducing Mike Chioda. I first met this gentleman way back in the late 90s when Tid and I were sneaking our way backstage at WWF shows trying to interview anybody who would stand still for 3 minutes. The first time I interviewed him was part of a day I've always referred to as my Canadian Mafia interview junket when I got to speak to him, Edge, Adam Copeland, Christian Cage, Tiger Ali Singh, former CFLer slash failed WWF experiment Glenn Kulka, and the late great Owen Hart. Following his time in the world's biggest wrestling company, he kept himself busy as hell with a talk show on Sirius XM, and he was longtime host of Aftermath on Sportsnet. He even took time to write a book. He continued refereeing independent shows and even made appearances for Ring of Honor. In my past life as a pro wrestling booker, I was always happy when I was able to add this man to my events because I knew he'd bring dignity, professionalism, and feta cheese. These days, you can find his ref to chef and ref and rants all over his social media where he teaches you how to cook delicious Greek dinners or tells you how annoyed he is with whatever the hell's on TV. Ladies and gentlemen, get your moussaka and a hot gyro and a piece of baklava. Welcome our homeboy from Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. Yes, he was born Demetrius, but you all know him as Jimmy Corderas.
Oh, man. How do I live up to that billing? That's incredible, man. I can't. You can. But
you've earned it already, man.
Thank you so much, guys, man. It's so good to see you guys. I know with this, unfortunately, my wife and I have been practicing our anti-social distancing since this stuff started. So we haven't really seen anybody, but at least this way, thank you to modern technology, at least for something, at least we can get to see each other this way. So I hope you all are well, man. And thanks for having me.
And, you know, I was thinking this week, I was listening to some old episodes, some old archived episodes of the show that the three of us used to do, That Which Shall Not Be Named. And we don't need anyone digging up that stuff. But
what's the term? K-fay?
Yes, sizzle.
Yeah.
But on that show, Jimmy was not only a regular guest, he was a regular in-studio guest. Like, he would often make the trek and hang out with us in studio as one of, like, the extra hosts for the night. And he would just sit there with us all night long and hang out and help us interview whoever else was on the phone. And it was so cool. You've always been a gentleman with your time. I can't believe we've been doing this show for over a year now, and this is the first time we've had you on. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
No, thank you guys. And those were great times. Look, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm not just saying this. I've been blessed with a hell of a career, and even post WWE, getting to do a lot of stuff that, you know, getting to do what I wanted to do. And it was very cool. And when you reached out and you said, "Hey, man," I said, "Oh my goodness, are you kidding me? Would you come on our show?" Yeah, twist my arm, please.
We always have a good time, right?
Here's always been my question that I always wanted to ask you, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And hello.
Hello.
You know I love you. But I have a question.
Oh, it sounds like he's setting you up for something.
I know.
I wanna know if it's heredity, if it was stress, or if it was genetics that caused the hairline you have now. Because you had some luscious fucking hair, bro. I know how old you are. Mm-hmm. And you are way too young to have... Whoo, brother.
You're not far in age from Tid.
Again, I will kifizzle that one. Anyways, you know, here's the thing, though. It has to be a little bit of all of the above. Everything from hereditary, because my father, although my father did have that little bit in the front.
No, it's your mother's father, man. It's your mother's father. That's your mother's father. Determines.
He had a little bit, but not quite like this.
Okay.
You know, I just took it to a new level. But, sure. You know, But all those years, you know, genetic stress, the whole bit. And I'll tell you what, as far as that old hairstyle, Edge used to refer to it as the frolic. But the way he said it, when I was a kid, I'd see this ref out there with this frolic, and I'm like, yeah. Kid, thanks.
Yeah. So is being a ref for the company, for the WWE, WWF, is it that stressful?
It can be. It was not at first. For me, it was stressful only because I put pressure on myself. I just wanted to be the guy that they can count on. And I want to be a guy who kept learning and not thinking I knew everything just because, you know, hey, guess what? This is a work. So blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. No, you never stop learning in this industry, whether it's the smallest, tiniest little thing. And I learned that early on, which I was fortunate about. But then once TV started getting bigger and you know what I mean? It started growing in the audience. And all of a sudden we started having the earpiece. Now they're, instead of getting signals from the timekeeper for times and stuff like that, the pencil in the mouth, which was the signal for go the hell home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, take it home.
Now it's in your ear.
Right? Yeah,
right.
So it's. I feel like.
I don't know the exact timeline. I'm guessing 96, 97 is when they started implementing the IFBs
pretty much. There. It has to be. I've taken a lot of ref bumps, so you know.
Yeah,
my memory. Sometimes.
Who's the most annoying guy in your ear from the table in the back?
I wouldn't say it's annoying. It's just scary because you know it used to be Gerald Briscoe who used to talk to us. Right. And Gerald was cool, man. And then sometimes whoever the producer / agent for the match was would come on and stuff like that. But when you heard Vince, it was just a different voice and you knew it was Vince. Something just went inside and you went,
yeah,
loss. What the heck? And he rarely came on there. Let me put it to you that way. Very rarely came on. But when he did, it was like you could almost tell. Just look at the ref in the ring. If he does one of these, you know the voice in his ear. Yeah.
You know, Jimmy, I wanted to ask you about eras, man, and the era that you're from. As I see that WWF turnbuckle over your right shoulder, it's the same WWF turnbuckle on the Jimmy Hart album over my right shoulder. These albums are presented in for you, by the way. This is the wrestling album, the original on vinyl, 1985. When I grew up, I was watching wrestling and I remember Jimmy Corderas with the frullet. And I talk a lot about era within the world of hip hop as a musician who has put out a record in the 90s. We get pigeonholed in being a certain type of rapper because 90s hip hop has this feel that people who grew up with it stay true to. Is it the same in your mind in the world of professional wrestling, having been from that era before the earpieces, that you attach yourself to with a sense of pride that you feel the newer school refs or anyone involved in the business can't understand or respect? Is there a difference in your mind?
I don't know if they can't understand or respect. I don't know if that's the right terminology to use. I think unless you experience that old school mentality, that old school feel, that old school presentation, the way it was done back in the day. Yes. You know, you could try and describe it as best as you can to people, but unless you've lived it, I don't think people really grasp exactly what was going on back in those days.
Right.
Like I'll give you an example. Like you asked earlier about is somebody ever annoying in your earpiece? Quick story here, WrestleMania 21. I'm refereeing Eddie versus Rey Mysterio in the opening match at WrestleMania 21. Wonderful match going on. And the story was Eddie getting frustrated throughout the match trying to pin Ray. So every time he tried to pin him, he'd kick out. Eddie would show some frustration. And Dean Malenko, sorry to call you out, Dino, but he would be in my ear, tell Eddie to show more frustration. So I'd have to creatively, you know, pass the message while it looks like I'm not passing a message. You know,
yeah. I mean,
that's the hard part too.
Right.
So it happened about three or four times, and I got shot the look. And I went,
yeah, because Eddie doesn't like that on the spot coaching.
But he's getting really frustrated. So it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it happens one more time. And now in my head, I'm thinking, do I pretend to look like I'm giving him instruction or do I actually say it? So, but I preferenced everyone by saying, Eddie, Dean says.
Yeah.
he doesn't think I'm trying to go.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
So the last time was Dean says, Eddie, Dean says, and he turned right around and he goes, shut the up. And I looked right at him and I said, shutting the F up.
Yeah, yeah.
So after that, it was like, now it looks like I'm passing a message, but I ain't saying
I think that's amazing, though. I would love for you to speak to that real quick, especially for people who can't appreciate the craft. One of the reasons I brought up the era thing is because I believe people from the 90s hip hop era respect the craft in a way that they think younger artists don't. The craft of being not just a guy who counts 1, 2, 3, but the passing of the messages. Can you speak a little bit to that craft, really? Because you got to do it, like you said, without looking like you're doing it.
Yeah, it's a little bit different now. I don't want to speak because there's a lot of good referees out there, but there's also some who think that the referee should be a personality, should be a person. And that is not what the referee is there to do. The referee is there to help the talent, the people who draw money, the people who sell tickets, tell their story. You are like... I made this reference before, and I know you've referred to hip hop, but I'm going to go even further back.
Sure.
You remember KC and the Sunshine Band?
Yeah, of course.
You remember KC? Can you name one member of the Sunshine Band?
Right.
Okay. They were an integral part of the presentation, the overall presentation, right?
Yes.
But you remember KC because he was the star. There's a lot of people now that are trying to get themselves over and get their stuff in and not.
Right.
They're not helping tell the story. Sure. I might have got a little off track there, but
no.
That's one of the things that we learned back then was, listen,
sure.
When you're passing a message, when you're given a message to relay to the talent, you have to relay it in a way that it looks like you're doing in the normal process of your match. Like, you're not going to just lean in and say, hey, they said do this, you know?
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off. Sorry. I was giving to these guys because I wanted to speak Nets. To your point, I mean, two examples that come to mind, not even out of the modern day era, but let's talk about a spot that floats around the internet that we all know about with one of the Hebner brothers, right? And Triple H and the big bump where he loses his shit off of the push, takes the bump, and Triple H takes the big bump back, rolls out. That's putting yourself into a spot. Or Danny Davis in himself, that whole thing that turned into a referee becoming a focus of a thing, right? So,
right.
I mean, and that was back in that era.
Right.
The one I thought
you were going to say, Tid, when you talked about Hebner, the one I thought you were going to say is, I remember X-Pac, Sean Waltman, and Kevin Nash used to always rib Earl Hebner for his cadence. Like when it was the finish, there was an extra pause on three because he wanted the pop.
Right? Yeah, I used to say that on our old show.
And I remember sitting in a hotel room one time with X-Pac watching an old video, and he's like, fucking Hebner working for that pop. Right. Sorry, Jimmy, go ahead.
No, but here's the thing. Hebner wasn't working for the pop for himself. He was working for the pop for the finish of the match. It was to get that finish over.
Yeah.
Again, sorry, Tid. Donnie just threw me off right here. But again, no. Those situations weren't the referees going into business for themselves. Sure. It's the boys, and like Hunter liked doing that stuff with Earl. You know what I mean? He had Earl as a nice gesture to him. It's kind of like if you think back, I had a situation with myself where I was the scab referee who didn't go on strike with the rest of the guys. And they worked a little angle around that. Now, that wasn't something that I went, hey, we should do this and blah, blah, blah.
You
that
didn't make yourself part of the story.
No, that happened. I kind of did in a way, but by accident.
Right.
I had just gotten married. I went on my honeymoon for 2 weeks. And while I was gone, they were doing that storyline. And I hadn't been watching. Yeah, I'm going to watch wrestling on my honeymoon. I want to stay married. You know what I'm saying? But, so I get back to TV and I walk in. Hey, guys, nice to be back and stuff like this. And Hunter walks up and goes, hey, Jimmy, welcome back. How was the honeymoon? I said, it was great. He says, too bad you're not working right now. I said, are you kidding? I can't not work. I have a job. I need the money. I just got married. And he went, hold on a sec. Come with me. And he takes me straight to JR. And he goes, Jimmy had a great idea. And I go, what idea? I was just kidding around. And from that, they went, Oh, so we could work it in where an actual one of the actual refs breaks the picket line, and they could work it into that final match at the pay-per-view. And so kidding around, it turned into an angle.
Yeah.
But it's not me going, I want to be the guy.
Right.
Jimmy, you know that when we're talking about referees in professional wrestling making themselves part of the show, I cannot go a second further without showing you this clip, because it involves somebody that the four of us know very well. Take a look.
We got Chris Angle championship material top to bottom. They were robbed with their loss, and they're looking to get back on track.
Breeze running into Fandango, and now Carter. Hold on a second. Referee, what a drop kick. I don't know what was more impressive. What the hell is going on here? This referee.
There's Daryl Sharma, formerly known as Hornet.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's Tid's protege. Tid trained him, brought him up, named him. Helped him helped him cut his teeth in this business, and there he is getting in the middle of the action.
And here's the thing, because you know, of course, I've made my rants before about the referees trying to get their shit in, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And you know, so I got called out on social. What about the NXT guy? And do you think Daryl went to them and said he wanted to do the drop down leapfrog spot with him? No,
might have.
Well, no, but here's the thing. I know exactly what happened there. You have two teams that are kind of baby faces, and they're having a fun little match, and they know that Daryl's a worker.
Yes,
that can work, because there's no. I might have been able to do the drop down spot part of the spot, but there's no way I'm doing the leapfrog.
Right.
But anyway, so they said, "Hey, let's have a little fun with this. Can we do this?" And I'm sure they passed it by Hunter and whoever else. And they said, "Okay, cool." So it's not like he went into business for himself. But see, when I talk about going into business for yourself, like there's a big face-off in the middle of the ring between the two talents, and there's this guy's face in the middle going,
It's very much like a situation like you said with Hebner. You know what I mean? Where somebody is like, they're comfortable with that referee. They're like, you know what? We're going to do something fun tonight.
Exactly.
Right. It's the same kind of thing. So kudos, like before we go any further, kudos to Daryl Sharma for like getting the chance to do this. Like this is fantastic for him. He is living the atypical, you know, childhood dream, so to speak, because we've known this kid since he was 15 years old. You know what I mean? And I traded him. I traded him tickets to a baseball game for a website.
For a website.
You know what I mean?
He was our webmaster.
It was unbelievable. Oh, and here he is, like he's doing fantastic things. And we had a conversation, and I said to him, and I'm going to bring this up, you know, because we were talking about wrestling, and he had been going back and forth, and your name came up, because I said to him, I go, look, you know what they've told you. They've told you it's not what you do. It's size. It's where you are. There's nothing you can do about that. But
in terms of getting hired as a wrestler,
because he had been down there a few times. He had gone down for the tryouts, sent down even in the old days with like 8x10s and portfolios and tapes and the whole. He'd been doing it for enough time, and so he had gained a repertoire. I'm sure, you know, even enough people knew who he was. That's why he ended up getting a job there. But it's something that we had a conversation, and I said to him, I said, look, you can look at this in two different ways. They could hire you, because he was kind of upset about it at first, obviously, because he went into the business to be a wrestler.
Right.
Right.
Understood.
And I said, you can look at this in two different ways. You can say to yourself, I could go down there, they could hire me as a wrestler, and we know the grinder that is the WWE and what they do to talent down there as far as the wrestling talent goes. You can go down there and you can get your shit in for a year, two years or something, right? And then they're just going to spit you out, and what are you going to do? Or you can be that smart motherfucker like Jimmy Corderas, who has a 20-year fucking career with these guys and has a job. That's what I'm saying. Like, has a job, has a career, and he's there, and he's comfortable, and he's living the dream, working for the company. You don't got to be the top guy to get the paycheck. It's still signed by the same person. And this is a conversation I had with him, and kudos to him for, like, you know, following through and just killing it out there.
Not
right
to mention
now.
Not having to be in surgery every other year.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Not that it doesn't get tough on the referees. Now, obviously, you don't bump like the guys, but,
right.
but you know.
Dude, your knees would have blown right out.
Oh, man, yeah.
Well, on that
you'd still be laying in the ring. Yeah, you'd still be laying in the ring right now.
I'd look like Vince from the 2005 Royal Rumble when he blew.
Oh, yeah.
You'd look like Hornswoggle. You look like Hornswoggle. Your legs would just shoot straight up, and you'd just be like you and no shins, like Cotton Hill or something.
Probably. Now,
Ted, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but
no, you're wrong.
Didn't you yourself do that exact same referee spot on an indie show some time ago?
On a number of them, we used to do all of these fair shows that I'm sure Jimmy is familiar with in and around the Ontario circuit. And I was booking a bunch of them for the promoter because they were double booked in a bunch of towns at the time. And so we would run certain towns, and I was doing spots and with myself and Big Ben Ortmans, another professional wrestler who I own Crossbody Professional Wrestling with, their cheap plug, and a very good friend of ours, childhood actor and teen heartthrob. Brady Wedham, absolutely right, and he was the referee. And he was the referee for the spot. So there wasn't a tag team thing, but we did that same exact spot, and then it finished off with me telling Brady to go up to the top, and he hits Ben with the big crossbody, and it's a fair show, and it's fantastic. It's a big pop for the kids, and everybody loves it, and yada yada yada. So when you see it on TV, and you're like, oh, good for him.
So you called the spot.
Yeah, 100%.
Years ago. That's what I'm saying. You're the one who called the spot. It's not the referee who said,
if you rewind this interview and go back to the part where Jimmy said, it's not like Daryl went to them and said, I have an idea. And Ted was smiling like, maybe he did.
Maybe he did.
Right.
All they had to do, it's as simple as, hey, can you do drop down leapfrog? Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Here we go. That's all it is.
100%. Yeah.
Yep.
Piece of cake.
Right place, right time. Right.
Yep. Exactly. And by the way, I again retro going back because Daniel mentioned the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
That turnbuckle it was confiscated WrestleMania 6 from the ring used at the Sky Dome. But anyways.
Nice.
Yeah.
Happy to say. Well, obviously, I was there for that, buddy. That was amazing.
That was
and
cool.
See that's
confiscated. Did it have contraband in it?
I haven't checked. I'm afraid I wanted to keep it intact, so maybe I should look inside.
How dope was that for you, Jimmy? Like you're reffing at WrestleMania in your hometown, man. Take us all the way back to that.
Oh, it's indescribable. I mean, like the first time I got the referee at Maple Leaf Gardens. There's the place that I was going to every 3 weeks and taking pictures, and that was my what I was doing and stuff. And then all of a sudden, you're in the ring at Maple Leaf Gardens, getting to walk down that ramp.
That ramp,
which was so unique at the time because I'm not sure if anybody, maybe in Japan they had it, but here in North America, I can't recall anybody else who had it. Right. And then doing your first match at Maple Leaf Gardens and splitting your pants wide open. It's just
amazing. No.
I know you've told that story a bunch of times.
Just that giant Greek hog.
No, it was the back end. No, it's the back end. You said giant, so it had to be the back end. But that was the night I learned when you're wearing black pants, wear black underwear or tights underneath, not light blue.
That's or a just veteran underwear. Move right there.
Yeah.
Wow. Or just underwear.
Right? Yeah, don't go commando.
No. Just say no. But anyway.
The last comment I want to make on this whole subject that we are on about referees at a pro wrestling show are really not supposed to be a integral part of the show. I guess they're not supposed to be a featured part of the show, right? They're a referee is supposed to almost blend into the background until you need them.
Hide in plain sight.
And yes, there is, they have a mechanical function within the performance of the match in order to, convey messages to the participants, as we've already talked about. And there is a piece in terms of, you know, the referee has to be involved in some way, whether it's, you know, not being able to see the bad guy cheating, or whether it's, you know, not being in position quick enough to count the three for the popular baby face, whatever it may be. There's all these pieces of the referee, but for the most part, the referee should be invisible until needed, right?
Right.
Is that part of the logic as to why the WWE, the biggest wrestling company in the world, has gone to this edict of referees no longer have names on television. They're just official.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think they took it too far to the extreme, though. Yes, I understand.
I kind of agree.
I don't have a problem. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, oh, great call by referee Charles Robinson, or whoever the referee may be at the time, you know. Mm. But to completely not name them, to make I get it. Exactly like you said, referees are there to be invisible until they need to be visible and help tell that story. And at the same time, you can't act like they don't exist. Right. Or they're nameless, faceless guys.
Sure.
I think every once in a while, just a name drop. Oh, referee so-and-so missed that because he was distracted by so-and-so.
Right.
You know, that's simple. It doesn't have to be over the top. Just a little mention.
It doesn't hurt. It's not like the audience doesn't know. I mean, was it just me or did I not hear a Daryl chant when Daryl did that spot?
I don't think so.
Yeah, but that was the boys.
I have no idea. Oh, the boys.
That's true. It's all workers there.
But we live in an age where the internet is so prevalent that people look up everybody all the time. But to your point, Jimmy, I mean, that happens in the NFL. We don't know any of the NFL referees' names. We don't know any of the Major League Baseball players' names.
Baseball players are legendary.
You know what I'm saying? Hockey play, like, we don't know a lot of major league sports referees' names. They will mention the name once in a while, but you know what I mean? It's just not a familiarity that we have with referees in sport. So I see why the WWE would kind of shoot that way, you know what I mean? Shoot towards that direction because they want, at the end of the day, I mean, is this not what they're trying to do until they bring in zombies?
I get that point completely. Back in the day in hockey, you knew who Carey Fraser was. You knew who Bill Friday was. Well, Carey Fraser after the no call on the high stick by
Gretzky. Hair. It was the hair.
Oh, and that too. You know, that really bugged me a lot once. Anyways. But, you know, and even in football, you had that Ed Hockley with those big guns and stuff like that. Guys, you remember.
Like one of each.
And you look in MMA and you look at Big John McCarthy. Everybody knows it. Herb Dean. Everybody knows who Herb Dean is. So.
True.
You know, you can make an argument either way, as long as you don't go overboard, you know, and the referees themselves don't go overboard.
Yeah, it's not like they've ever sold ref merch that I'm aware of.
Jimmy sells merch.
Did they sell Danny Davis merch? Did they sell Danny Davis? Like,
but wasn't that part of the whole?
Yeah, but that was part of the evil.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, right? That would have been the closest they could have come to like selling like stripes as the shirt. You know what I mean? As far as like merch goes.
Yeah, they sold the referee doll. They sold the referee doll, but it was like a generic.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two things I was going to say. One, to address that point about referee merch, if you look at the other company that is prominently featured on national television right now, which is All Elite Wrestling, their referees do sell merch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't get me started on all
so
of
does
the...
Jimmy.
Jimmy does too, but Jimmy's a retired.
It's right behind
one.
Him. It's right behind him. Look at it.
It's okay.
Hey, I learned from Mick Foley. Plug your stuff.
Yeah. You and Danny are from the same school.
I'm just going to say it right now. If you send him enough money, he'll sell you that foam rock skull thing right behind him.
Is that foam rock thing for sale?
Everything's got a price. Yes. I had to steal the gimmick. I've got some really cool stuff. There was a boxing match between Owen Hart and Ray Rougeau in Montreal one time, and one of the round cards, the round five card. Yeah. I had them both sign it. I still have that.
Nice.
Has A&E talked to you yet?
No.
With this hidden treasures thing, are they going to show?
You might
up
have
Jimmy,
stuff they want
at Jimmy's house.
Not yet. No,
that is actually a pretty cool show. I know the whole show is like totally worked and gimmicked because they know where all the things are that they're going out looking for.
Of course.
But I like it. It's a fun like pickers type show, but they're looking for wrestling gear. I find it kind of fun. Just to backtrack a quick second. I was going to say, and we don't have to really touch on this at all, but when we talked about how the WWE has made referees nameless,
right?
The unexpected side effect of that is now when people talk on Twitter, when people talk on social media about a match, now it's the black ref, the brown ref, the fat ref, the girl ref, right? That's how they talk. And like, to me, that's more dehumanizing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. I agree. And that's why, you know, like I said, the name drop doesn't have to be often, just occasionally drop a name, but you don't have to go as far the other way. Like that other, like you said, prominent national promotion does, where a lot of the times I think that, you know, I've railed on them before to the point where actually one of them thinks that I intentionally go on social media to bury them. Yeah. But which I don't, but it's, anyway.
That's the thing. See, like, I was involved in the pro wrestling business, working in the pro wrestling business for the better part of 2 decades. Mm-hmm. And for the last bunch of years, I haven't done anything other than just be a distant fan at best. Every now and then pre-COVID, I'd go out and watch a couple of TIDS shows and hang out with them just for old time's sake and touch base with a few of my old buddies from the business. But that's about it. Mm-hmm. That all being said, every now and then I'll pick up some clips on YouTube or whatever, see what's going on WWE, AEW. I like to see friends of mine that are on TV doing well, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I find that AEW product so difficult to watch. So difficult to watch. And I know that they're not appealing to my demographic. I know that it's not me that they're appealing to. And that just makes me feel old, and that's okay. But you've posted a bunch of your ref and rants on social media where you talk about things like the referees are making a sham of what's happening. Like, they're acting like there are no rules. Like, and it may not necessarily even be the referee's fault. It's how the thing's been booked. It's what they've been told. Or maybe the referees are just clueless. Who knows what the deal is? But the thing that kills me about that company, I know that they've got some young guys with weird ideas at the top of the company. Mm-hmm. And all the stories that I've been hearing is that the collection of executive vice presidents are no longer getting along. They're mm-hmm. constantly infighting about creative. Mm-hmm. And the thing that blows my mind is a company that has so many amazing minds, like some of the greatest minds in the history of the business.
That's why Arn
Anderson, Jake Roberts, Tully Blanchard, Dean Malenko, they're all backstage, and the product looks like a terrible indie show where everyone's doing the same moves, everyone's diving to the floor, everyone's doing a 22-minute match, and every match looks the same because they're doing the same shit every week.
There's a difference. It doesn't look like a terrible indie show. It looks like a high budget one.
Yeah.
I just meant in terms of the ring work.
But let me put it to you this way. I'll be honest with you. There are times when I'm watching it where I am entertained by certain things. But like you said, everything is looking very similar. Everybody's got to get their stuff in. Everybody has to be over the top. And then you get a guy like Jay Christian come out to the ring and slow everything down and have a match that makes sense and tells a story. And everybody's going, oh, holy shit, what the hell's going on here?
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, and look, I understand trying to evolve the business. You know, you don't want to, we're not in the George Hackenschmidt days. And for those of you who don't recognize the name, Google it. and I get evolving the business and growing the business and change, you know, but you don't do a 180. You mesh old school with new school.
Yeah.
And you can do it. That's why I like NXT. NXT, I think right now, does the best job of blending old school with new school. There's still a couple of things that on there that I'll go, that was a little bit too much. But at the same time, I think they're for now getting it right. And then when you look at current superstars in the WWE, because heel and face seems to be a lost art as well. You look at a guy like Roman Reigns, and he's such a classic heel, and he's so in the zone and doing it right, in my opinion. You know, again, this is my opinion. He's doing it so right. And a lot of what's going on now, I think, has to do with, like you said, watching it. When I try to watch it, I try to watch as a fan and try to enjoy. I want to be entertained.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch it and say, hey, I'm going to take notes and critique this now. Mm-hmm. You know, but why? I'm not writing. I'm not on the dirt sheets. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
but you can't help it because you have experience. You have a mind. So when you see stuff that's just nonsensical, you can't help it. It's crazy.
No, but that's what I mean. That will stick out. I could sit back and watch and enjoy, and then something like that will happen. And go, there you go.
Yeah.
Why are they outside the ring for like 2.5 minutes? Why is the referee constantly going out there to? Oh, this is how we'll do it. We'll throw him into the rail. You go check on him to make sure he's okay. That'll make you stop the count. You know, and I wish they'd be a little more creative in the way they distract refs. You know,
right?
Oh man,
I've always thought that the WWE puts on the best professional wrestling product. Mm-hmm. Then you have other companies like AEW, like Impact, like Ring of Honor, that all have TV deals, right? MLW has a TV deal. All these guys have TV deals, and they know how to wrestle. They know how to do a match. They know how to film it, and they know how to get it out to the audience. What they don't have is they don't have guidance. They don't have years of experience of doing this over and over. They've built one business well, let's face it. You know what I mean? The WWE has done this one thing for so many years that they've had the ability to do this. And I think that it's going to be like, and everybody thinks, well, I can do this. I've got a camera and let's do this. And it's, if you don't have those things, because I think one of the biggest things that's probably missing from AEW is, like you said, if everybody's doing a dive, if everybody's doing super kicks, if everybody's doing all of these things, where are the fucking agents?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where are these guys that are supposed to stop those things from happening? And we all know that, sorry, the producers or whatever we're calling them, whatever we're calling this them this week. I don't know what we're going to call them next week. Who fucking knows? But you get it, right? Yeah. But this is something that is sets the WWE and you know, that sets them aside from all of these other companies. Just because you have a TV deal, just because you have a distribution deal, doesn't mean that you're putting on a product that is going to be ever comparable to what the king of the castle is putting on. Stop pretending that you can and just just have some fun. And do you think that maybe that's what AEW is kind of doing? Is they're just like, you know what? We're just having fun. But now the problem is that the anniversary or the honeymoon is over, and the company wants to see the return on their investment. So yeah, this is why there's so much. This is why there's so much arguing, infighting, and the stress. It's all happening right now, right? Mm-hmm. So do you see this? There's almost like these small little implosions, and we're going to go through these before they can throw people out, bring people in, throw people out, bring people in. Like, is that something that you see happening?
I see the potential of that happening big time, because if there's one thing we see in the WWE, we know that there's one guy in charge.
Right.
He's the final voice. He is the one everybody goes to. It's not like I have to go to these guys and those guys and these guys, and then everybody has to agree and that sort of thing. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, Tony Khan is the guy, but Tony Khan is relying on other people. Yeah, Vincent Kennedy McMahon is his own boss. He does what he wants to do. And when he has a vision in his head, whether you agree with it or not, that's his vision, and he's going to go with it. And you can either follow that vision and follow him, or, you know, there's a door.
Get fired.
Listen, my days as a pro wrestling booker are in the past, and I'm never going back to that. But if shut up, asshole. How many times did I put you over, dick?
You didn't deserve it. I put myself over every time.
Showed up out of shape, no gear.
Tremendous. You're talking about you as a booker.
So what I was going to say is, if I went in there and I was going to try to do something, I mean, for God's sakes, they have created this problem for themselves in that company, because number one, it really is like 80% of the guys that got hired because they're friends with guys that are already there. And now it's like nobody wants to hurt anyone's feelings. And in the couple years that the company has been up and running, they've only fired two guys, and both of them have been for misconduct. Like, you just have so many people. And as a result, virtually everyone on the roster is part of some kind of faction. And so every single show has a match with run-ins and gang beatdowns and run-ins, and every friggin' match looks the same. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't handle this. Like, nobody matters because they're all homogenized into these groups. Nobody stands out. You know, it's like, it's like I used to say to Dan, right? Like when we watch superhero movies, like you watch the Iron Man movie, Iron Man's awesome. Now you put him in the Avengers movie, he has to sell and someone else has to come save him, right? Iron Man's not so tough anymore when Captain America and the Hulk are around. But I think that there's too much of the same, and it makes me bananas. And man, they have so much potential. They got a billionaire as their money mark, and let's be honest, that's what he is. He's just the guy that pays the bills. But man, they are missing a golden opportunity, and it stinks. But anyway, let me digress. Yeah.
Wrestling is stupid. So Jimmy, what else do you do?
Well, now that I'm no longer, I'm doing shows like this today. But for the most part, I do my daily ref and rant, which is whatever hits me that day. And I try to have some fun with it. And I know people's attention spans are not what they used to be. So I try to keep it around a minute.
What's in the coffee cup?
And just try to.
His live videos.
Depends on the day.
Is it a cup of coffee? Okay. Is it a cup of coffee?
Usually, unless I'm filming at night, the night before. And then, you know, it may be some kind of pop or something. Like, this is water right now. This is water. It's not ouzo.
I'll tell you, Jimmy, I love the ref and rants that you post on social media. The one thing I will say, though, I'm with you, dude. You can make those things longer, because there's a lot of times when I watch you and you're getting into a subject and I feel like you're just getting your teeth. And I'm like, come on, Jimmy, I want to click where it says click here for longer video. And I want you to keep going, because man, like you have a great mind. You have so much experience. And I just feel like the 90 seconds, 60 seconds, whatever it is just not enough to do you justice. I get what you're saying. Attention spans are short, but you have a captive audience. You have an audience that loves what you do.
True. But I want to save the longer videos for when someone's willing to pay for them.
Like your OnlyFans.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy. Yeah.
Which happened to coincide with the word family, but anyways. I also do, really quick, sorry to interrupt you, Dan.
No, man.
As you mentioned earlier, I go from ref to chef. I've discovered I married probably, and I know a lot of people have said this, the best cook on the planet, and how I'm not 360 pounds, I don't get it.
She is a lovely human being.
And yes, she is. And so all these years, she's been doing all the cooking and everything. And I said, let me try this. And then because I was the barbecue guy, that was it. Mm-hmm. I was the barbecue guy. You give me the barbecue, I'm cool. But now I'm like, hey, I can get into this. So I started, and then she says, you know what? I'm going to take pictures of you cooking. So now we started taking recipes down and stuff like this. And who knows, maybe there's a ref to chef book in the future. I don't know.
I love that. And you know what?
You fucking asshole. You know damn well there is.
he's already got the book.
Publisher's reading the first draft right now.
This whole thing's been a plug the entire time.
Maybe there's a book.
Hey, maybe
there's this. Maybe one of these right here.
I'm kind of thinking this would look like a good cover.
Jackass.
God damn it, I love you.
I fucking love you.
I'll say, over the course of the last year and a bit, 14 months, whatever it's been of the pandemic, that was one of the things I did too, Jimmy, is, and you know, you follow me on social media, but I decided, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to teach myself to cook, you know? And prior to that, all I could do was craft dinner, toast, and barbecue. Like, that was it, you know? Right. And I said, it's time for me to, you know, do some stuff. And literally, I had zero training other than YouTube videos, you know, being patient, experimenting, and then every now and then calling Tid and going, what do I do with this? Because Tid's a hell of a chef. And Tid would give me some, no, you can't no sell that shit, you tough biker looking motherfucker. Tid is a hell of a chef. I would call him up and go, so how long do I put the brisket in the oven? Well, you have to tenderize it.
You never call me for tips.
You can't cook,
bro.
You're the king of heating up frozen dinners.
Wow. You'd burn ketchup, taking it out the fridge.
Hey, burnt ketchup is tasty. So,
hold on a sec here. So let me get this right. Yeah. There's four of us on the screen here. Yeah. Three of us cook.
Yeah.
One not so much. Is it? I feel like it's Sesame Street. One of these.
Yeah. One of these things. Is not
if you want to take over.
Yeah. No. It's
I'll leave.
No. Don't
Jimmy,
screw you, Spanish.
A couple weeks ago. A few weeks ago now, I guess it was earlier in May, I suggested to a friend of mine who's not a wrestling fan, never watched wrestling in their life. I said, you know, there's something I just watched. I want you to watch it. Tell me what you think. And what it was the Dark Side of the Ring documentary featuring Owen Hart, which, of course, you are featured prominently in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is an absolutely beautifully done documentary. It is also heartbreaking and shocking. There are elements in that story. There are details in that story that I didn't even know. And you know, I remember that day, May 23rd, 1999, vividly. Obviously, you do for completely different reasons. I was actually on the air that night when it happened, doing my radio show at the Fan 590 with Jeff Merrick. And when this happened, we were literally the first mainstream media source to report it. And the very next day, between Jeff and I, we were on every Canadian news outlet talking about it. I was on Canada AM that next morning on breakfast television, did 30, 40 radio shows. And really, I had nothing to say. Like, it's a tragedy. He was an amazing person.
Yeah.
You obviously, I mean, Tid and I got to know Owen a little bit, and he was so good to us. You knew him on such a different level. I know that you've been asked about that day a million times. Mm-hmm. I know you've talked about it a million times. You talk very eloquently about it in the Dark Side of the Ring documentary. First of all, can you believe it's been 22 years last weekend?
Man, it's so hard to believe. And like you said, there's certain parts of that day that just are so vivid in my head. And then there's other parts that just I'm blank to. It's incredible how, I don't know how to describe it. It's like I remember that day in the afternoon and going out ringside and chatting with Godfather and Owen here's what we're going to do. And then Owen saying he had to, you know, do a rehearsal and stuff like that, which I didn't witness myself because I was off doing other things. Cause at the time I was also, you know, part of the ring crew, which we had other duties. And then other things, like after everything went down, I still don't remember going from Kansas City to St. Louis.
Right.
Right.
I don't remember whether we drove there. I don't remember flying there. I just don't remember the trip from Kansas City to St. Louis. It's just gone. It's obviously the toughest day for me. It's just indescribable. I don't know how to.
Do you think Jason Eisner? The guy, Dark, do you think they did a good job? Do you think that, like, how was there anything that you would have done different?
I don't think
so. The way that they did it.
No, I thought they handled it very well. I thought they did it with respect. That was the only thing that concerned me. And when they called me and asked me about being interviewed for it, I said, listen, you can ask me anything. All I ask for is just be respectful to Owen's memory and Owen's family. And don't try to make this a hit piece against one side or the other or anything like that, which it wasn't.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it anyways to me.
I feel like
they've done a really good job with a lot of their episodes. Mm-hmm. I feel like that they've done a very good job on the Dark Side of the Ring stuff. And we know a lot of people who have been, you know,
used for the filming of those shows and whatnot, mm-hmm. but the storytelling and the way that they've presented it, I think that they've done a fantastic job. I look forward to some of the new stuff for sure coming out. But
I think a lot of the Dark Side of the Ring documentaries, the different episodes, and by the way, for anyone who's not familiar, I know not everyone listening is a wrestling fan. Dark Side of the Ring is this amazing series that's done by Vice where they talk about some of the really sad stories from the world of pro wrestling, mm-hmm. and then they do these very detailed documentaries where they dive in and try to find out more about it. There are some episodes that are complete burials. I mean, Brian Pillman does not look good in his.
No, he does not look good.
Yeah. And there's just no way around it.
Right.
The piece you said, Jimmy, about the Owen Hart episode not burying anyone, I'll be honest with you. I kind of wanted them to go a little harder after the company. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted them to go a little harder after WWE because, you know, Vince McMahon looks like a dick when they put that piece into the documentary about, you know, when he tried to sue Martha.
Right.
You know, the widow of Owen Hart.
That was insane.
That makes him look ridiculous. The equipment that was used for the sakes of showmanship, that makes them look ridiculous. You know, the fact that, I don't know, there's so many different pieces. I think that they sprinkled responsibility on the company, but I felt like they could have gone much, much harder. But let me ask you this. It's been 22 years. Mm-hmm. Do you have, I mean, Owen Hart was a prince of a guy. I'll share this one story. When Tid and I were, and I alluded to this in our intro tonight, when Tid and I were first going down to wrestling shows, to WWF shows and doing interviews back in like 96, 97, the world was very different back then in terms of the way the PR department worked for interviews. It was, we'll get you credentials, we'll get you in, and we may or may not get you someone to talk to. You're kind of on your own. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it was Lord of the Flies, like you're on your own. And so we're backstage and Owen's walking by with the Intercontinental Championship on his waist, and I just looked at him and said, hey, do you have a minute? And he's like, who are you guys, what's your story, you know? But
so I still get that.
I said we're from this internet radio station, we're doing this thing. He's like, okay, let's do it. So we talked. He was amazing. And after 10 minutes he's like, so what are you guys doing now? And I'm like, well, we're going to hang around and see who else we can get. Who do you want? Who do we want? I don't know. The Rock, Mankind, Stone Cold. He's like, hang on. And he just goes and he starts bringing guys. Right. Like, these are my friends. Yeah. Go talk to them. And
we've always said that if it wasn't for Owen and his kindness, his ability to just live in the fucking moment, that jerk, you know what I mean? If it wasn't for him and his ability to be the person that he was, I don't think that like live audio wrestling would have been what it was in any way, shape or form. I firmly say till the day that I die that I owe everything for everything that that show did to that guy. He was the one that opened the door for all of us to now, 22 years, you know, plus later, we're able to still do this. So if it wasn't for a guy like him, you know what I mean? None of this, absolutely none of this is possible.
When Tid and I started live audio wrestling, we were on an internet radio station with 100 other shows, and none of the other shows had listeners, just us, you know, and a lot of that was because of Owen and what he did to help put us over and get us content on a weekly basis. Jimmy, it's getting late and we're going to say goodnight, but I'm wondering, do you have a favorite Owen story that pops to mind?
Oh my goodness.
I know there's
so many of them. You know, obviously the ribbing that Owen did. Then the brilliant thing about Owen was his ribs were hilarious, yet harmless.
Yeah,
You know, it didn't
damage. Not like a Mr. Fuji rib.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But I posted a picture of this, and I tagged F. Jarrett, Edge, and Christian in it as well earlier this week.
Yeah.
Because I kept these, but there was a tag match in Oberhausen, Germany. It was Owen and Jeff. Owen and Jeff versus Edge and Christian. And during the match, they did the spot where I would get distracted and Owen would use a foreign object to get heat. And this was going on with other stuff, like he would do a second rope splash on the ankles and cover the ankles and yell at me, count, you know, stuff like that. But he was using this foreign object. I would get distracted. And of course, you know, they do the thing where Edge would run in the ring and I'd go to him and he'd pass the object to Jeff and I'd check Owen and he wouldn't have it. And then it'd come to the time in the match where I'd catch him with the object that he's got it tucked under his arm. So, you know, I'm like, hey, lift up your arm. I want to see what you got under there. And he's like, no. He says, milk it a little bit, right? So I'm, hey, lift up your arm. Come on. He says, okay, start a count. Tell me to raise my arm and start to count to five, right? So I go, okay, raise that arm. If I get the five, you're disqualified. So I start 1, 2, 3. I get the 4. He raises his arm. It's this red napkin. And I am both shocked and doing my damnedest not to lose it because I want to laugh so hard.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do now. I mean, so I'm, there's this like, you know, the pregnant pause there. So I finally just, what the hell? I pick it up. I go, were you using this? Were you using this? Then I went to Jeff. He was using, you know, and I'm looking around. I can't believe you. And I go to throw it out the ring and it does this thing. And he's going, holy crap. He goes, you get this. I go,
yeah.
I learned from the best. And then later on in the match, they go into the four-way and they get Jeff and Owen in the corners and they're ready to do the 10 punches. And they're looking up at the crowd going, hey, hey, hey. And while they're looking at the crowd, Jeff and Owen take out these little rubber ball noses, red rubber ball, and put them on their nose. And then Edge and Christian turn around. They go to punch. And they look at each other and they start throwing them and you know, of course they fall off. So I went and grabbed them and I still have them.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, is this for a house show?
Yeah, it was just a house show.
Yeah. It was no. Oh. See, that's always the misconception, right? Everybody says it's just a house show.
Those are the
house
best.
Shows are the fucking best. That's where all the fun happens, right? Yeah, that's where you get to work out the kinks and gel together and have fun together, right? Because there's no pressure.
That's it.
There's no pressure of TV. There's no pressure of somebody in the ear constantly, you know what I mean, trying to put the segment together. You're just having fun and wrestling.
And if I could really, one more quick one that happened in Canada here. The night before, we were in Montreal, and making his debut was Carl LeDuc. And he was wrestling Justin Hawk Bradshaw that night. And let's just put it that Carl was, to put it nicely, wasn't ready. So we're in the locker
room. Kid, he's a tough as hell kid.
But 100%. he just wasn't ready, you know.
Sure.
So you know, JBL says, "Oh, we'll do something easy," because Carl was going over. He says, "Just do a schoolboy, you know, schoolboy me 1, 2, 3." And of course, I'm reffing the match, right? He says, "Okay, I don't know how to do a schoolboy." He says, "Pardon me." So we're in the locker room, and JBL says to me, he says, "Jimmy, schoolboy me." I said, "What?" He says, "Schoolboy me here." He says, "Yeah." So I schoolboy JBL in the locker room, and he's looking up at him while I got him curled up. He goes, "This is how you do it." He says, "Okay." So they go out to have the match, and the poor kid was messing up badly. So, you know, John was laying his stuff in, let's put it pretty solid. But then put himself in a small package, and the match ended. Wow. So, you know, the next night we were in Ottawa, and, you know, Jack Lyons is the agent, and he says, tonight you're going to work with Owen to Carl. Because he figured Owen's not going to beat the kid up, right? You know, so Owen, you're going to work with Carl LeDuc. You're going to go over, but one thing we don't want you to do, don't let him run the ropes, because he couldn't run the ropes. You know, he would run, kind of turn, lean. Like I said, he wasn't ready. So Owen says, okay, Jack, no problem. Don't worry about it. So what does he do? They lock up. First thing Owen says to him, shoot me off, Chris. Beautiful. So he shoots, you know, Carl to the ropes. And, of course, Carl slows down, and Owen's doing the big slow. And it was just like the entire time I've got my ref shirt like this because I'm trying not to laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Jimmy, amazing. Listen, we're going to say goodnight. That story I told about you know, when Owen ran out into the hallway to find us more guys to interview. The funniest part about that, this part just popped in my head, is as he ran out, he's like, hold on, let me get you somebody. He runs out. He runs right past his own brother-in-law, Davey Boy Smith. And Davey Boy goes, he ain't coming back. Like, I literally thought we were being pranked, right? I'm like, well, that's that. And he came back with The Rock, which was amazing.
Tremendous.
Anyways, Jimmy, you are amazing. Thank you so much. Let's do this again, my friend.
Definitely. I appreciate you guys reaching out anytime. As long as I'm available, I'm here,
hey,
man.
I don't blame the wrestling heads for getting their shit in today, but I do want to say this before you go, Jimmy. Tonight, before the Leafs and the Habs played, Sportsnet ran a little special called Scarborough Royalty, and they started showcasing some of the Scarborough-born NHL players, including Wayne Simmons and Toffoli and some of these guys. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is exactly how I feel about my boy coming on the show tonight, because this show has had Shaq Claire, Lawrence Gowan, Eric Bauza, Maestro Fresh West, and I'm a Scarborough boy too, so I just wanted to acknowledge Scarborough royalty being on the show tonight and let you know you're part of a big family here on the God.
Oh, man, thank you. Bro. Happy to be here, man. And like I said, anytime, check out the Ref and Rants. Check out, here comes the cheap plugs, if I can.
Sure.
They ain't on your head. Hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Man.
So on Twitter at Jimmy Corderas, on Instagram at Real Jimmy Corderas. You can find my Ref and Rants there at any time. And also, I have Ref and Rant t-shirts now at prowrestlingtees.com/JimmyTheRef. So, hey, and who
said
knows?
Refs don't have merch.
Hey, tremendous. Well, former refs. No, former refs.
Former refs. Can
former
refs.
Gotcha.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Brother. And you know what?
Listen, Jimmy, you're the best.
If I've never said this before, every single time when you came and worked one of those wrestling shows that I got to book, you were always a gentleman and a true professional. And you know what? You didn't have to be, because who the hell was I? You had so much more experience than anyone else on the show, and you were always a true professional, willing to do anything for the sakes of the program, for the sakes of the show. And believe me when I say this, and maybe I've not articulated this in the past, your kindness and your empathy and your understanding and your patience has always been appreciated. Thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And I appreciate you guys too for what you do. It means a lot, and it means a lot for you guys to reach out, and we are going to do this again. Trust me.
Absolutely.
You can't get rid of me that easily.
Scarborough in the building, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That is the one and only Jimmy Corderas, Jimmy the Greek. And we are all out of time, ladies and gentlemen. So, no time for sign-offs, no time for final plugs, no time for final shout-outs. My bro Danny O, Notorious T.I.D., my name is Donnie Da Silva. This is episode 57. We are done this party. We'll see you next time.
Deuce.